Now, there is, as I said, another story. And this is a story I was asked to tell in the West, and for some reason, it has been hidden in the West. And as I say, part of the story that I've been asked to live in the last 30 years was to try to make this story more known in the West. And this has to do with the whole tradition of the complete transformation of the human being, in which the soul becomes incarnated within the human being, in which it is not just a relationship of you and your soul, but your soul comes and lives within you. And I think this was present in the first two centuries of Christianity. And it's a central theme of Christ and his disciples, this birth into human consciousness of the Christ principle, of the soul, of the divine. And then, as you know, in the early years of the church, the bishops made a decision to ban esoteric practices, and it got lost. It's still present in some of the Eastern Orthodox Christianity, but it was banned by the church. They wanted worldly power rather than spiritual experiences, and then the Inquisition finally delivered its death blow. There were the Cathars and people who had some of these esoteric practices. Now, what I want to say from the beginning, and this is a whole different dimension of the soul's journey. And the Sufi says you have to be a bit crazy to go here. That's why the Sufis are called idiots of God. It is about the complete transformation of the human being. It is about the awakening into human consciousness of the consciousness of the soul. I am he whom I love, he whom I love is me. Now, you can't buy this in the marketplace. You can't get this at the bookstore. You can't get it on an audio tape. This has to do with the certain esoteric practices. Now, to be clear, if you read the Katha Upanishad, written 2,500 years ago, it tells you about it. And it tells you how to bring the soul, the Atma, into consciousness. Because it has always been part of our human destiny to be given this opportunity to fully incarnate the soul into human consciousness. And from the very beginning, the masters, the great ones, those who look after the spiritual destiny of humanity, have given practices and techniques to enable this to happen. The first time I consciously came across it was when I was 17 and I read a book called The Secret of the Golden Flower, which is a Taoist text. And it describes in detail how you create a body of light with certain breathing practices. And something in me immediately recognized, yes, this has to do with the complete spiritual transformation of the human being. Yet, it is interesting because when many of the spiritual traditions came to the West in the 60s and 70s, this inner core of teaching was passed over in most cases. And yet it is the essence of the soul's journey, to become a living presence. There is a beautiful little saying again by Rumi, "My heart is light upon light, a beautiful Mary with Jesus in the womb. My heart is light upon light, a beautiful Mary with Jesus in the womb." And that Jesus in the womb is the divine self that is brought into incarnation within the human being. And light upon light has to do with the whole Sufi mystery of how this takes place. Light rises towards light and light comes down upon light, and it is light upon light. Now, as I say, part of my work has been to weave this story back into the consciousness of our culture for 30 years now, so that it is present. It's like a thread. You can weave something into the consciousness. Maybe nobody hears about it, but maybe in 100 years' time, that thread is still present. Because that is what drew me. Yes, it is wonderful to have this connection with one's soul, to be able to go into prayer and be nourished and speak to your soul. But for me, it was never enough. I wanted more. And so I found myself at the feet of my teacher, who had been trained in that way. And I was also given the teachings to pass on, to give that experience or make that experience accessible to others. Now, I will give you some details about how this is done. And there are ingredients you need for this stage of the soul's journey, for this incarnation of the self. First of all, you need an energy or a power source. You don't have enough on your own. And in different traditions, they get access to different power sources. For example, in Taoism, and I've studied Taoism, you access the Tao, that energy within life that on a lower plane is qi energy. Maybe some of you have practiced Tai Chi or Qigong. That is its lower level. But the Taoist masters of old used the energy of the Tao, and they used breathing practices and visualizations to create this body of light, so that the Tao could become fully present within the sage, within the master. Very few traces of that left. In Buddhism, in my experience, they prefer to use the energy of pure consciousness or empty mind. And again, you work with it, with practices, with meditations, with visualizations. It's a very intense practice. It takes many years. And out of that, you create what is called the diamond body, your own immortal self, the self, or your Buddha nature. You realize your Buddha nature. Become your Buddha nature. But you need a power source, and that's what they work with, the light of pure consciousness, incredibly beautiful light. In fact, some people in our group who've done that practice in past lives, they have it present in their spiritual centers. Very beautiful light. Sufis use the energy of love. Love is the greatest power in creation, and Sufis use the energy of love. And the love is given. And this is where it gets a little complicated to understand in the West, because it is given through this teacher-disciple relationship that has always been at the core of Sufism. That the teacher gives the love that the disciple needs to transform directly into the heart of the disciple. In our particular tradition, it's done through this bond of love called rabita that is made between the heart of the teacher and the heart of the disciple. You make a bond, rabita. It's a connection, esoteric connection. And through that connection, you transmit love. And it goes directly into the spiritual body of the disciple, of the wayfarer, and that gives them enough energy to transform. That is given, it's an act of grace. So first of all, you need a power, you need an energy. And as I say, in the tradition I work in, that's really what I can describe and share in depth, that's how it's done. You give love. Love is an energy, love is a tremendous power. And it's given. and you put it into the heart of the student. The second thing you need is you need instructions. How do you use this energy? And part of my work was to translate the instructions from the texts in Sufism into contemporary English. And I spent 20 years doing that. How do you work with love? It's not something that belongs to our Western canon at all. I'm amazed at how St. Teresa of Avila did it when she wasn't even allowed to practice silent prayer because of the Inquisition. She did it. Stages of prayer. Unbelievable. She was a great master. But otherwise, it is not part of our Western canon. How do you work with love? And there are different ways you need to work with love. It is not complicated, but it's an exact science. This final aspect of the journey of the soul is an exact science. Again, you must remember that from the very beginning, go back to the Katha Upanishad, great spiritual masters have given these techniques to humanity to enable humanity to make this journey of the soul, to complete this circle of love. And in our tradition, the love is given, then you have to work with the love. And we have certain practices, like meditation, and there are also principles of the path that we follow. One is the remembrance of the heart. You're present within your heart at all times. And then there are qualities of character you need to develop to live with this love. Like patience, you have to learn patience. I have spoken about this for many years. So this is part of the story of love that I have been articulating for the last 30 years. So there is the energy, there is the instructions, and then there is the container. And this is very important. The alchemists, who are kind of have a vestige of this in the Western tradition, speak about the vase bene clausum, the well-sealed vessel. You need to contain it. You're transforming your whole being. You're turning lead into gold. And it needs to be contained. Otherwise, things come in that disturb the process. There needs to be an energetic container. Just being vegetarian doesn't cut it. And in fact, the last two lots of talks I gave, one is what's called the container for love, and the other was a special talk I gave a year ago, which is spiritual guidance for living in toxic times, because I saw how present toxicity was coming into this container. So you need a container. Now, one aspect of the container is your own practice. If you do the practices right, if you do, on our path, the remembrance of God, the zikr, the meditation, if you live in the right way, that creates a container. But that isn't enough, because that's you. And traditionally in our path, the real container was satsang, sitting in the presence of the teacher. In the presence of the teacher, there is an energy field that contains this whole process. In fact, for the first 10 years after I met my teacher, I wasn't allowed to read any books, and there were no teachings about this path. We just did a meditation, and I just sat at her feet once or twice a week. That's the tradition, and she brought that tradition from India, where her teacher's disciples just sat in satsang, being in the presence of the teacher. And that's how it was with the teacher before, and how it was with the teacher before that. That creates an energy field, which is needed for this extraordinary transformation of the human being. Remember, we're doing the most, almost completely impossible thing of giving birth to the soul within human consciousness. So you become fully conscious of your divine nature before you die. So you give birth. The Sufis have this expression, it takes time to make a soul pregnant with God. That is part of this process. It's like, so he said, light upon light, beautiful Mary with Jesus in the womb. Traditionally, that container is being in the presence of the teacher, right? But there is a problem about that, that I experienced in my lifetime, which was my teacher's room could only hold about 40 people. And with her teacher, there were only, if you look at photographs of people sitting with him, there were only 20 people. I think once a year there were like 100 people came to the Bhandara. And that was fine when I first knew Mrs. Tweedy, and there were just a few of us, 10 of us, 20, 30. And then she wrote a book, and she moved into my house. Me and my wife Annette lived upstairs looking after her. And suddenly more people came to the door, and they came from different parts of the world. And so this particular path decided to have an experiment. And so there was a plan to create a bigger container. And the plan was to create an energy field that would contain all of the community on this path. And about 10 years ago, we maxed out at about 800 souls, as many as I could look after in this life. And they have different meditation groups in different parts of America and different parts of the world. There needs to be a container, and so I created, starting 40 years ago in my teacher's house, and then say in the last 30 years, created an energy container, which many of you who follow this path here have experienced, which is wherever you are in the world, you're connected to this path, you are in an energy container. And that has worked well enough up till now, but now the instructions have changed. And that energy field has now been taken away. And I explain a little bit, is that when you were sitting in the presence of your teacher, and you sat with him for maybe, or her, him for her, for maybe 5 or 6 years, 7 years, and then, hey, time to move on, get on with your life. And you'd be sent back into the world, and you'd have to live your own practice in the world, in your life. And maybe you'd see the teacher once every year, a couple of years, but you were no longer held in that energy field. You had to own your own practice yourself. And that worked if you were teacher was in a little town in India, and people came and sat in his courtyard and then went off. But it hasn't quite worked in the same way if there are 800 people all over the world going through this, or being given the potential to go through this inner transformation. So I kind of hung on for as long as I could, but I was made aware recently that everybody has been given what they need. They've all been given the love they need, and there are the instructions, all the books and talks I've given, how to live this love. And the container then just remains the container of your own practice. And that's how it's going to be from now on. So that experiment of expanding the small number of people who could sit in satsang with their teacher to, say, these 800 souls, that is over. It's really important. There are many of you here who followed this path, and it's really important that that is impressed into your consciousness and you don't try to recreate it. You don't try to go back, because it means you have what you need. You've been given what you need. The job of the teacher is to give the student, the disciple, what they need. Again, this is something that is not really understood in the West. There is little understanding of this very intimate inner connection, that it was present in Christianity at the beginning. You can see it in the relationship between Christ and his disciples. That incredibly moving meeting of Mary with Christ in the garden at the empty tomb when she mistook him for a gardener. And he said, "Woman, why weepest thou?" And then suddenly she saw who he was. And she said, "Rabboni," which means teacher. I think this esoteric tradition was present in Christianity in the small groups that came after Christ. But then it got lost. Like many things, it got lost. But it is the most extraordinary thing that can happen to you. As I said, at the beginning, in the journey of the soul is really somewhere else, and it can have a meaningful experience in this life, or a few meaningful experiences. As I said, first through relationship with the sacred, and then the numinosity of religious ritual, symbolism, art. And then, in today's world, really just through love, through kindness, through compassion. That is where the soul is present. And then there is this step in evolution, this waking up. This moment of grace, that you can then begin to have a relationship with the soul. And the soul can have a relationship with you, and the soul can be nourished in hidden ways. If you respect it, if you realize what you have been given, the Grail serves the Grail King. And then there is this further step, this completion of the journey of the soul, this extraordinary story of the soul being born within the heart, coming alive within the heart, becoming fully conscious in this life, no longer the light you meet at the end of the tunnel when you die, but awake in your own eyes. This is really the greatest mystery of being a human being. I don't see what more could be that you become, you can say, one with God, but that is a bit grandiose. Yes, you are one with your divine nature. Your divine nature is one with you, and it is alive within you. There is a saying, "My servant ceases not to draw nigh unto me with works of devotion until I love him. And when I love him, I am the eyes by which he sees, the ears by which he hears." The divine becomes fully present in your life. The circle of love has been completed. So this has always been part of human history. It's been very hidden and yet known about in the East. In the monasteries of Tibet, in the temples in China, in the Khanakas of the Sufis. And part of my work is why I said it's a story that began 30 years ago, this first talk I gave about the mystic marriage, because that is where it begins, this mystical marriage within the human being, is to bring that story into today's consciousness, that it isn't forgotten. So many things are forgotten. We live in a time when so much is forgotten, and so it is, its thread is woven into the tapestry of life. This possibility that the human soul can wake up within a human being, that the divine can become alive, and the light of the soul then shines through the eyes of the human being, and that light that I saw in those little children becomes a living presence within you. Not something you read in books, but something that is your friend, your companion, your lover, your guide, your you, because it's you. It all goes back to what you really are, and that you can break down the barriers of separation, break down the barriers of forgetfulness, and incarnate the mystery of who you really are, this seed within the soul that contains all of the stars and all of the sunsets and all of the sunrises. And that you take with you, friends. That doesn't get left behind at the doorway to the next world. That is the completion of the circle of love. That is the greatest story of the human being, even if it is hardly ever heard. And so for those of you who follow here, who are following this path, I have given you what you need. Use it. My journey is moving on. You have been given the love and the light you need. Now live it. It can take you to God. It can take you deep within yourself to this mystery of what it really means to be a human being. Because that is the journey of the soul, is the journey of the human being. This is the privilege of being a human being, to have the possibility for the soul to come alive within your own heart, for it to become a living presence, the living presence in your life.